This is the Unchained Binge Podcast. I'm Caleb Fretz. We're going to go deep on Netflix's new Tour de France docuseries, Unchained. Today is episode 3, Weight of a Nation. In today's episode, we go to France. Deep into France. This is the Frenchest of episodes, focused on a national hero in Thibaut Pinot, an eccentric manager, Marc Madiot, and a lonely Australian badly in need of some real-life subtitles, Ben O'Connor. Let's get into it. That's a great place to start. Poor Ben O'Connor. Poor Ben O'Connor. Can we start there with this episode? As Anglophones, and in fact, I'm going to take this opportunity to introduce a new member of our quartet here. We've subbed out Johnny Long, and we have brought in noted Australian Ian Trelor. Welcome, Ian.
Bonjour. It's good to be here.
We know you don't speak French.
No,
also joining me, as in the last two episodes, Kit Nicholson. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
And Abby Mickey, all the way up in Finland at the moment. That's fun.
Yeah, I'm at the Finland Gravel event put on by Tiffany Cromwell, Valtteri Bottas, and...
Never heard of him.
No, I don't know who he is. And the Steamboat Gravel crew, the team behind Steamboat Gravel, have expanded to include Finland Gravel. Looks like a pretty sweet event so far.
Well, let's get into a little Netflix here. Poor Ben O'Connor. I do think that is genuinely a good place to start in this particular episode. It's not where the actual episode really begins. We're going to go a little bit out of chronological order here. But as an Anglophone, as an English speaker here, I think we all, particularly as an English speaker who spent a fair amount of time in France with relatively poor French, I think there was a fair amount of empathy, sympathy for Ben O'Connor in this episode, who is an Australian. He was fourth at the 2021 Tour de France, came back in 2022, and had sort of the weight of expectation of an entire French team, AG2R, on his shoulders. And he came to kind of understand what that weight means. In fact, that's kind of that's the thrust of this entire episode, is what the weight of being even French adjacent means at the Tour de France.
Yeah, I felt really sorry for him. And his perpetually raised eyebrows through the whole episode. She's like, what? It was, yeah, I felt for him.
He was trying so much to understand, both linguistically and also culturally.
Yeah.
And also just battling through terrible, terrible pain.
You kind of forget that he had such an amazing 2021 Tour de France, actually. I thought it was interesting, like, kind of watching this series. I don't know if we want to go into like real life bike racing that's happening right now outside of this Netflix series, but watching what's going on in this series with Ben O'Connor and everything, while simultaneously having the Dauphiné run, the Critérium du Dauphiné run, while this is coming out, and watching Ben O'Connor have like a pretty incredible ride at the Critérium du Dauphiné in the lead up to the 2023 Tour de France. It's really interesting, like that, but also like Pinot, how this just was a horrible episode, like not a horrible episode for him in that, like, I think we got a pretty amazing view of him off the bike, but also like a horrible time for him on the bike. And then you kind of have what he just accomplished at the Giro recently on the mind. If you're a fan of cycling, if you're watching the racing, apart from the Netflix series.
Yeah, well, I thought what was interesting was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure they decided in editing not to include the fact that did he win a stage in 2021 or 2020? It was 2021, wasn't it?
2021.
So the decision not to include that he had actually won a stage, which had helped him get into that position on GC, seemed a little odd to me. But I guess that was partly to put the emphasis on the general classification and the yellow jersey, but also to add a little bit more to his underdog status in the team and at the race.
I feel like they kind of they kind of showed, they showed when he won the stage in 2021. They just didn't show,
did
like,
they say he won it?
When he was kind of crying at the finish, and they were holding him, and true, they were saying, you're fourth at the Tour de France. That was the stage he won. And so they just didn't mention that he also won that stage when that moment was happening. But I think, yeah, that is kind of like to highlight the bigger picture of the tour, and that it is the general class, which is interesting because you'd think, like, with this episode, so much emphasis on Pino wanting to win a stage, that they could have mentioned that Ben O'Connor won a stage in 2021.
It's kind of weird to show it and not actually mention it. It was a stage in Tatine, so it was sort of a pretty large mountain stage, I think stage 9 in 2021. Yeah, and I believe that those shots were from the finish of that stage. They're quite close up, and so it's kind of hard to tell. But based on his reaction, that would be my assumption.
And he was very grimy with weather as well, and that was a very, very wet day.
It was a very nasty
day.
Stage. Yeah. So kind of, let's take this all the way back to the beginning. So the purpose of this episode is to show us what this race means in France, what it means to French riders, what it means to French managers, what it means, and I think this is the purpose of Ben O'Connor being in it, like I said earlier, what it means to be even associated with one of essentially like the two big French teams, being Groupama FDJ and AG2R Citroën, right? O'Connor on AG2R, Thibaut Pinot and Marc Madiot, the manager, over on Groupama. So the episode opens up with this scene from the side of a mountain somewhere, and it's a bunch of fans, right? Like old French, we'll call them mammals, middle-aged men in Lycra, and they're hanging on the side of the road, and they are starstruck, right? They are giddy little children with their phones out as Thibaut Pinot just sort of rides by doing his regular training ride. It felt like a pretty good way to kind of set the scene for this entire episode.
Yeah, it builds nicely to probably the quote of the episode when Pino, who is evidently quite an eloquent guy, saying he feels like sometimes he feels more popular than he is talented.
Des fois, je suis plus aimé que plus fort en finale. Donc, c'est sûr qu'il y a des jours où je préférerais être moins aimé et gagner plus de courses.
And although we hadn't quite got there yet, you know, that early part of the episode was certainly building up towards him potentially, well, he was targeting a stage, and in the build-up we've had in the past two episodes and the trailer, there's a lot about, you know, Pino, you can win a stage, you're going to win this stage. And so I imagine as a newcomer, you might think, oh, maybe this is the day when this is going to be a huge success. But it's building up his persona and his popularity, but also there's, I don't know, that his solitary climb with his adoring fans at a slight distance. I don't know, there was something quite symbolic about it.
I think part of it was also just to show that in France, these guys are like rock stars. Like they are what, I don't know, NFL players are in the US, I think. I don't watch football, but like these Pino can't walk through a French airport without getting recognized, and I think that part of that was to show what a big deal he is in France, like how well known he is, and also how well known the Groupama FDJ jersey is. And when you kind of put that next to the AG2R Citroën jersey, that it's really interesting because the two teams are so French. But Groupama FDJ is always the first team you think of when you think of a French team. AG2R is the first team you think of when you think of brown bibs.
This episode reminded me just how superior that Groupama kit it was to what they've got now. But anyway, that's just a minor point. I love that kit.
No, you're
it,
so
I
right.
I didn't love it to begin with, but it was so much better than it is now.
It was such a good kit. Yeah, I agree.
I think Thibaut Pino, in comparison to other French riders, I mean, perhaps Julian Alaphilippe maybe has that kind of status, but he is kind of the romantic hero of French cycling. He is so beloved, and at the 2019 Tour de France, which they didn't really get to in this episode, but he won a stage up to the Tourmalet and was looking really good for the GC, and then damaged his thigh late in the race and left the race in tears. And it was like the country had been plunged into national mourning. It was replay after replay of him climbing in a car and then filming through the window and crying, getting a massage, and just sad Thibaut Pinot sitting there in his boxer shorts weeping for what felt like hours. It's one of my enduring memories of that year's race, because it was just so, I mean, it was obviously sad for the race, but it was also so clearly desperately sad for the French.
Yeah, I know that they did. I mean, they showed him climbing off the bike as part of their montage of passion, I guess you might call it. And I mean, this episode was full of emotion, passion, and a lot of tears. And that was kind of the primer for it, I think.
I think it's also important to know, or it was important for them to get across that Pinot is under a lot of pressure from France as being this, like, he's super loved, and there's a lot of pressure on him to get results, and that he isn't really a GC hope anymore, and so stage wins are all he can get. And so I think part of that opening sequence was also just like, there's pressure on him from everywhere, pressure from himself, pressure from his team, pressure from the fans, pressure from the nation. And also, like, Ian, you mentioned he's a romantic cyclist. One of my favorite lines of the whole episode was when Matteo described him as a romantic cyclist lost in a modern world, which I thought was really cool. But also, like, Kit, you mentioned the music in the first episode, and I feel like with the music, Pino's music was so interesting because it was kind of like
techno something or other.
Yeah, it was really modern and really like rock star-y, which did not fit with the personality that we then saw from Pinot when he was speaking. So I thought that was really interesting. Like, I think it's not the first instance of the show trying to kind of make you feel a certain way about a character that their personality maybe isn't in line with. Maybe they've learned something from Drive to Survive. I feel like they do a really bad job of making those characters likable. So I think they're trying to go in a different direction with this one. But yeah, I thought the music for Pinot was not nearly as French as it needed to be.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about the music in this episode. I liked that it wasn't cliched and accordion-y and you know, the classic, what you might expect from the French episode. But
from
besides
our,
the music,
our theme song on this podcast.
Well.
Where I went into our music library and searched accordion.
Okay,
and
there we go.
Saw what came out.
But we're not shy about the cliches.
We're not.
But one of my favorite parts of the episode was, and we're used to Pinot being this fairly serious, quite often because he's disappointed in himself, but this fairly sort of downtrodden, emotional guy. Not downtrodden all the time, but you know, he's got a lot of passion in him, and he is, you know, by the nature of the sport, there's more disappointment than there is success, unless your name is Tadej Pogačar. But my favorite part of the episode, one of my favorite parts of the episode, was when he was wandering around the team bus in a crumpled white t-shirt tucked into his shorts and making jokes with Marc Madio and the guys on the bus. And it was just, he just seemed so brilliantly relaxed, which just seemed to contradict what I at least understood about the guy.
I think what the episode doesn't really get into, and maybe what we can add at some additional context around, is it kind of points at this, but unless you understand the background, you maybe didn't pick up on it, is the difference between a team like Groupama and a team like Jumbo-Visma, and the way that they operate quite differently. And like we've seen a fair amount of Richard Plugo, who's the sort of GM of Jumbo-Visma, and he's a quite calculating figure, right? And then we have the contrast with Thibaut Pinot describing Marc Madio as like the mother hen who always protects them and has never let them down, but also definitely not the sort of the same level of technical focus, I guess, in a sport that has become increasingly technically focused, and that sort of thing. these little tiny, you know, the marginal gains era of Team Sky and in the sort of 2010s, all that stuff has really changed the sport away from this romanticism and has made it much more difficult for the romantics of the sport to find success, I think. And they didn't really express that outright in this episode, but that's the underlying theme for me, is that like this is the French teams, the French hero, are kind of from a previous era, and they don't necessarily really fit in with the rest of what's happening in the tour all the time, to the point where, French haven't won a Tour de France since 1986 with Bernard Hinault. They don't look like they're set to change that anytime soon. I liked that as sort of the underlying context. I just don't think that the episode really, it didn't say that outright. You kind of had to know that about cycling to get that bit of it.
Yeah, what I liked about having watched the past two episodes, we've now been introduced to a few, and they're not all team bosses, but a few of the administration figures at the various teams that we focused on. And in this episode, and it was, you know, I don't think it was contrived. It wasn't a pattern that they manufactured, but the idea of family being a key part to the French, well, the sport culture and the cycling culture. And you had it, you know, made explicit, like Pinot describing Madio as both a protective dad and a mother hen. And then, of course, you had the family dynamics with the AG2RDS and his son, and then talking about his father and his mother who weren't able to see his team find success. And there was that kind of very different dynamic being shown to us, which... Yeah, I mean, so again, we've got those figureheads being detailed to us that, you know, coming from somewhere that you might not have expected, I think, as opposed to riders.
I want to get into Julien Jourdi in a little bit, who's the director from AG2R. We see a fair amount of him in this episode, but we'll get to that in just a second. I do think it's also worth mentioning, and they don't say this anywhere in the episode, probably because they created this thing possibly before he even announced it, but Thibaut Pinot is retiring at the end of the season, at the end of 2023. And so we are about to enter his final Tour de France. And at the 2022 Tour de France where this was shot, he was definitely, I would guess that that's probably where he made that decision, right? And that adds a level of context to some of what we're seeing as well that didn't make the final cut. Again, probably because they didn't really know. But that's an interesting way to look at the where the sort of the storyline from this episode is going in the coming year.
I loved on Pinot and kind of seeing the bigger picture around this tour. I think one of my favorite parts of the episode was seeing Pinot with his goats and with his animals. I took a picture of when he's holding the goat in his full like Groupama outfit, feeding the baby goat, and he says that he just feels like calmer with his animals or something like that. Like, I thought that was amazing, but also for me demonstrates this behind the scenes look of riders that, like, even us as journalists following the race, following the riders, following cycling, we think we know a rider, but we really have no idea what's going on behind the scenes and in their personal lives and when they're at home. And I think being able to see Pinot this way in such a raw setting, like cleaning his water bottle outside of the barn with all of his baby goats, was just amazing. Just an amazing moment.
I was pretty thrilled to see the goats in there. I mean, I've been a Thibaut Pinot goat enthusiast for quite a long time, and have written about it in the past. And
what's the Instagram account?
Kim.goat, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, which is one of the goats, not one of the baby goats. Kim is a fully grown goat now. I also thought, not to get too far into the weeds, it was interesting that he specifically called out his goats and his donkeys, which is brutal for the two Highland cattle that he got a couple of years ago, which I would have thought were a clear standout of the herd. On the goat front, I also really liked... I've just learnt that you can watch it in French without overdubs. So there was some dweeb doing an overdub on the version that I was watching, where Thibaut Pinot was saying, stop putting your feet in there. That's where your food goes. Come on. Okay. So I...
Well, brief PSA, public service announcement. Depending on the settings on your own Netflix, when you first start watching this, it might put you into dubbing mode automatically. This is what happened to Ian. He didn't realize that there was anything wrong. The better way to watch this, I think...
I'll correct you. Decided. I realized that something was wrong. I just didn't realize I could fix it.
The better way to watch this, I think all of us have decided, is to leave it in the original audio, the original French or English audio with subtitles. So if you're opening up Netflix, bottom right-hand corner, there's a little box, kind of looks like a comment box. You can click on that. On the left side, audio, you want French original selected. That will leave the English speakers in English. It just leaves everybody in their original language, basically. And then subtitles over the right. You can put whatever subtitle you want. If you want it in English, you want it in Spanish, whatever you want. That is the better way to watch this show. And I do think that is worth saying on this podcast for Definitely. Anybody out there who has missed this opportunity to not have to listen to weird dubbing. Dubbing is a very French thing, by the way. And I remain convinced that it's part of the reason why France in general has just sort of like fewer English speakers. It's sort of like a north-south divide in Europe that does this, where all the northern countries do subtitles. So imagine like growing up watching American TV in English with subtitles in your own language. Like you'd pick up the language pretty, you pick up English pretty quickly, right? As opposed to France, where they actually have a rule that everything has to be dubbed into French. And so all American television has French people saying all the things. So anyway, that I think is probably part of why it's done in the way that it is. But you can turn that off. So please do so, because it's terrible.
I have to imagine that a lot more of the emotion will come through. Like the early scenes with Marc Maggio hanging out the side of a car, screaming like an absolute lunatic, just has this voiceover over the top going, "You've got it, man. Yes."
Oh, no.
No,
it's real bad.
Turn that off. Turn it off.
Ugh. Yeah, I want to hear Maggio screaming.
Yeah, you do.
So, I mean, this is. We felt like it was worth saying that out loud. But also, this is the kind of weird decisions that could potentially make this show a lot less popular, right? Like, if that dubbing ruins some of the emotional moments, and it's the automatic setting for a lot of people watching Netflix, it's not going to break through for those people, right? Like, it's just not. We don't want to go down this rabbit hole right now, because we're going to talk about the show as a whole, I think, right at the end of these episodes. But it is worth, I think, highlighting that, like, this is a problem for the spread of this TV show. Maybe they think that the dubbing is better for an English-speaking audience, but the product is so much better in its original form.
I mean, it makes you wonder kind of who the show is targeted at, because the French already love the Tour de France. It's not, I don't know if they're going to have any problem kind of spreading the fan or increasing the fandom of cycling in France. The problem is everywhere else, and especially English speaking countries. And so you would want, I guess it depends what their end goal is, but you'd assume that their end goal is to get more people interested in cycling. And the Frenchness of it, I feel like, has definitely is going to detract from that.
I'm a real, I don't know, I'm a big fan of foreign films, and this has been a problem with the foreign movie market. And I'm talking about, so foreign from the perspective of basically the American Academy, the Oscars Academy, the Hollywood system. Foreign movies include everything that's not made in the UK or the US. And it's been an issue forever, because people just aren't willing to read subtitles. But it makes for so much better experience, and also much better escapism, in my opinion, because if you've got to really focus in on what you're not only seeing, but I mean, essentially reading as well. And it doesn't take too much away from the experience, if at all. But you know, the when you're speaking, you're not just speaking with sound, you're speaking with your whole body. And when Bob Jungels, for instance, at the end of this episode, starts to talk about how, you know, it means a lot to the team, and he's getting choked up and his face is kind of doing this little contortion as his muscles twitch, he's trying not to cry. You only really get that power when you've got, and he's speaking in English, so it's different, but still, it's an example of how, you know, acting or performing or speaking is not just a language thing. And I don't know, I think it's a fight that's going to go on forever, and it's not anything that can be fixed. But I just wish people would watch things with subtitles, because usually it's a better experience anyway. You can't just pick up your phone and get distracted.
All right. That's enough of our PSA.
Fair enough.
I'm going to take a brief break.
Hey there. If you've been enjoying the Unchained Binge podcast, you should know that this podcast, like everything else we do here at the Escape Collective, is member funded. That means we're funded by, well, you, if you're already a member. And if you're not, we hope you'll think about becoming one. You can head on over to escapecollective.com/join to sign up and become part of a pretty awesome community. It's a community that supports this podcast and the others on the Escape Collective podcast network, as well as everything that we write about bikes and more over on the escapecollective.com website. It's also a community with a very active Discord channel where we sometimes do live recordings of podcasts, by the way. In other words, there are lots of reasons to sign up. Our monthly memberships start at $11.99 USD, or you can save 30% by signing up annually. We'd love to have you as a member. And again, you can head over to escapecollective.com/join to find out more and sign up.
Another underlying theme of this episode, which I have to say I kind of enjoyed, was some pretty blatant French-on-French violence. The sort of like the AG2R Groupama spat. Both of them, Matteo and Julien Jourdi, both of them kind of make these little, like, you know, elbows in the ribs at the other. Groupama saying, you know, we're the biggest, most French team. AG2R saying, well, we actually win stages. Like, they both have a bit of this kind of rivalry. And I sort of was vaguely aware that this rivalry existed, but I get the sense, based on the fact that both of them brought it up, or maybe this is just purposeful in the edit, that rivalry between those two teams is actually kind of a bigger deal than I previously thought.
Yeah, I wonder. I just really like the segue from, it's basically, as you say, is that we had a lot of focus on Matteo and Pino to start with, and then we had, oh, and we are the most French team, and the others aren't quite so much. And then it's like, and here's AG2R. And it was just, this is perfect kind of out. And here's the, you know, Fighter 2 has entered the arena. It was brilliant. It definitely raised a smile for me.
I wonder if there's a sort of regional component to it as well, because if you're at the Tour de France, there's all of these different fan clubs that pop up. And there's not just those two teams. There's also AKS Amsic, Total Energies.
And Cofidis.
Cofidis, of course. I forgot Cofidis. How could I
there
forget
There are five
Cofidis?
French teams. Total Energies at least is in World Tour.
Too
but
many.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but they're there. Yeah. Anyway, so I think that they all have their supporters in a way that English language audiences don't support cycling teams. I think we probably more support riders, whereas there seems to be a real fandom for the team, and whether that's based on clubs that feed into them or regional sort of allegiances, I'm not sure. But it is something that seems distinct from our experience in the Western sphere.
I do think, Ian, that there's something to the regionality of these two teams. And it is worth mentioning that, yeah, there's lots of French teams. This episode makes it seem like there's only two fighters in the ring. There are lots of other French teams, but there is a bit of a regional rivalry. Perhaps AG2R has historically been kind of Rhone Alps, kind of, well, down near the Alps region. Groupama has been a little bit more, I guess, sort of northwest, up near Paris, middle of the country. I do think that there's a fair amount of kind of regional fandom that happens here, and that is perhaps how the French fans kind of split themselves a little bit.
they also keep riders. They keep the same riders for a good amount of time. I think, Arno Demar is an example, the sprinter. Groupama is a sprinter, and Pino. It's slightly different at AG2R, at least it has been the past few years. But again, they have got a real desire to develop French riders.
Let's focus over on AG2R. So we talked a lot about Thibaut Pinot already. I think the reasons why he was used are quite clear. He's a tragic figure at this point in French cycling. Well, I mean, he could have won the Tour de France if things had gone slightly differently in 2019. He's definitely sort of fallen down a little bit. That kind of narrative, I think, is very compelling. He also has this whole sort of goat thing and all the rest of the things sort of surrounding him that are all reasons why Netflix decided to really slow this episode down and like spend time at a farm and do some things that feel very different from previous episodes. The other half of this episode, though, was AG2R and Ben O'Connor, an Australian, and kind of a fish out of water story, and also another way to illustrate just how brutal the Tour de France can be. He had sort of a deer in a headlights look for much of this episode, and to be perfectly honest, I don't feel like it painted AG2R as a team in a particularly professional light. I understand that riders riding through pain, riding through injury is something that happens all the time in the Tour de France, and what we probably saw there was not really any different from the way that the sport has operated for a long time. I mean, you could very much argue that Primoz Roglic riding through a separated shoulder across the cobblestones was just as terrible, right? But seeing it up close, and in particular with a rider that was speaking English and was clearly struggling so desperately, was pretty jarring, I think.
I think it was especially jarring, I think, that there was this conversation going on about whether or not he was going to continue through a very clear language barrier. And so it kind of looked like he didn't have a choice and he wasn't going to be able to argue his corner. And I imagine that's probably, well, I like to think that's probably a little bit of, I don't know, overzealous editing, and that he might have had more to say. But yeah, it was hard to watch. And I'm all for riders cracking on through road rash and, I don't know, even Geraint Thomas and his pelvis fracture, which was stable, and doctors told him he couldn't do any more damage. But Ben O'Connor couldn't lift his leg.
I want to get an x-ray.
Why?
J'ai vu une radio.
Oui, oui. Va dans le bus.
Oh, it's a radio. Fuck me.
I went through hell on stage 8 just to finish. I was pretty adamant that was it.
And he was very clearly in a lot of pain. And that it just made me quite sad. And then, you know, when Jungels did win a stage and that was gave him a green light to leave the race, that didn't sit well with me. Because although I get it, I understand that there's this respect for the race and there's a, you know, we don't give up. And I like that about cycling. We put ourselves into a pain cave and it's deliberate and you have to dig deep and push beyond the suffering or whatever. But, nothing changed for Ben O'Connor when Jungels won the stage. It was just that, the team can now let him go and recover.
Yeah, I think it was it's this really interesting thing in cycling, right? And you have this debate a lot with kind of the older generation of whether or not the riders are tough. There was this huge conversation around the Giro d'Italia this year in 2023 when a stage was shortened due to weather about that the riders just aren't as tough as they used to be. And it's a really frustrating conversation. Like as the partner of a cyclist, watching somebody go through that much pain and have their team not really allow them to stop. And even as a professional, I was forced to race with a concussion and had migraines for 6 weeks afterwards and could barely even get on a bike, but they needed me to be in the race. And so it didn't matter that I crashed and lost my helmet. You know, it's like, that's just kind of part of the old school-ness of cycling. And I think it was interesting with Ben O'Connor. He's like a relatively newer rider. He's very young compared to a lot of the riders that he's competing against, and he had clearly had a different mindset when it came to this injury and riding through it and riding through the pain. Cause like you always have, I mean, growing up, whenever I would get injured, my parents would always say, well, Tyler Hamilton rode the Tour de France with a broken collarbone. You can do this. You can push through this pain. And it pisses me off. And so watching this episode pissed me off, cause I was like, just let Ben go home, because this is not helping him at all. And it's not, watching it was like, I don't know, it put such a bad taste in my mouth.
Tyler Hamilton also had to get his teeth capped because he ground them to nothing through that Tour de France because he was riding with a broken collarbone. So I'm not sure that that's really I'm not sure that's really what we want to be focused on.
My parents love me. My parents love me, though. I shouldn't like say. But it was like it's like this mindset that was like a very old school mindset of just like, you can push through the pain. And with cycling, that's always a thing. It's always like something having to do with cycling is like, no matter what injury you have, you can push through it. And the same thing happened when, was it Lawson Craddock rode the entire Tour de France with a broken collarbone in 2020, I believe, 2019. Like, it's not something that's gone away by any means, but it's something that I hope to see cycling leave behind in the future. And I was really proud of Ben O'Connor for standing up for himself and leaving after Bob took that win. I think he should have been able to leave, you know, the day that he felt he could no longer continue. But this is cycling. This is the part of the sport.
Yeah, it was really interesting as a comparison with what they'd said about Pino earlier in the episode. You know, when they were talking about his bad luck at previous tours. And of course, there was that, you know, climbing off in 2019 in tears. But then there was he crashed on the first stage in 2020. And I think it was Mark Madder who was explaining that, you know, Pino had really damaged his back and he'd got abrasions all over the place and his morale was really low, but he continued the race. But then he lost basically a whole season to the injuries that had been, you know, left to be tortured for 3 weeks. And so that was a really interesting sort of comparison. And I don't know, I would like to think that if you were watching this for the first time, and you picked up on those things, and you're watching the, you know, this was your introduction to cycling, you think that was a slightly odd contradiction. And what are Netflix trying to say about this? What light does this actually shine on the culture of cycling?
Part of the reason why it was such, the whole thing is really interesting to me, is because there is so much French influence in this whole show. That's a big part of the reason why we've got Steve Chanel explaining the basics of bike racing in French, instead of one of the many, many, many English-speaking journalists that could have said the exact same things, right? Like, he's not saying anything mind-blowing here. He's doing the basics for... He's playing the Will Buxton kind of figure. Stuff like that. Like there's clearly a fair amount of French influence in this. And then this episode, while incredibly sort of romantic and slow, and I think that in from one perspective... sort of is like this older era of professional cycling was beautiful, and these are the teams and the riders that are continuing these traditions. From the other perspective, it just seems really unprofessional, and it just really, like, it doesn't paint either team in a particularly positive light. And I think that dichotomy is fascinating, that, like, if this is given the French influence of this entire show, clearly the people that made this, I don't know if they even believe that they have painted these teams in a negative light, but they certainly, from my perspective, have, particularly AG2R. I loved how sort of emotional Julien Jordi got throughout this episode. That's the director sportif of AG2R. Like, he clearly passionately cares about this, but then some of the actual decisions that were made were a little bit bonkers.
There's a really interesting contrast between the two managers, with Julien and Marc Madio, and how, like, Marc Madio was a successful cyclist in his career before he became the general manager that we know now, and became the mother hen of a bunch of little cyclists waddling around, versus, like, Julien, he never had as successful a cycling career. He said in the episode, like, he never got to race the Tour de France, but he is now a huge part of a team that is successful at the Tour de France. And I think it's interesting the two different career paths before and how they influence the two guys as managers of teams. I don't think you'd ever see Marc Madiot plastered in tattoos of the team winning the team classification, which is like almost a consolation prize in the Tour de France. I wish it was a bigger deal, because cycling is a team sport and that definitely gets lost a lot of the time. And the only time you ever stand on the podium with your teammates is when you've won a TTT, which is very rare. So as someone who raced, it's the most beautiful moments I've ever had are standing on the podium with my team, but it's the team prize is like basically not, it's the Movistar prize, the only team in the Tour de France that even cares about the team classification apart from Julien is Movistar. And so that he has that tattooed on him along with a bunch of other like cycling related tattoos is, I think, a really interesting dynamic, the two of them and how their teams are run, and also like how they approach riders with injury, thinking to how that's going to impact the future versus how it's going to impact tomorrow. I found that really fascinating.
What about Bob Jungels? Well, Bob Jungels kind of saves the day for this French team. I mean, the other angle of this is you've got these two French teams that are competing for Frenchness, and then AG2R clearly loses that battle because the two riders that we see most often are not French. One is from Luxembourg, Bob Jungels, and the other is from Australia, Ben O'Connor.
Yeah, that was nice to see. I think that the way that they framed Bob Jungels within the whole of the episode was kind of interesting, because it, across the three episodes to date, COVID is not a factor. COVID, apart from the fact that people are wearing masks, is largely removed from the narrative. Bob Jungels almost didn't start the tour because he was positive for COVID and controversially just snuck in on some sort of technicality of what level of virality he had. And I think that any of that kind of backstory was interesting to be omitted. I'll be curious to see how they get into things on episode 4, because we're about to come up to a rest day where, spoiler alert, a lot of people went home with COVID. Whether they bring that up, I'm not sure. We'll find out. But it's certainly been interesting as somebody that was at that race where everyone was walking around with masks and there was this ever-present sort of fear of people getting sick hanging over the entire thing, that they've chosen to remove that narrative.
Most of these episodes so far have, yes, they've focused on particular teams. They've also focused on sort of a particular stage or stages in the race. In this episode, we get a bit of the Bob Jungels stage win. We also get this heavy focus on Planche de Belfi. That's kind of the structure underneath which the whole Thibaut Pinot segment is created, right? Is that they're in his home region. He rides Planche de Belfi a dozen times a year. He really wants to win this particular stage. He doesn't. I mean, basically, the part of the problem with that is the Planche de Belfi is so steep and so difficult that it really just becomes a power test, and the strongest riders were always going to win on that, unless he managed to get in a breakaway or something. Thibaut Pinot is just not that rider anymore. Now, last couple episodes, we've sort of dug into what's happening around what we're seeing on TV. That's a little bit difficult in this one because we're the actual events in question step quite a bit out of the chronology of the actual Tour de France. But Planche de Belfi, for example, is there anything worth mentioning that we didn't see in this episode? Keeping in mind that we might come back to Planche de Belfi in a future episode. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
I don't have a point on that particular question, what happened outside of it, but I thought to support what we were saying earlier about the different management styles, with Marc Madiot going and talking to Pino's family afterwards, and there was clearly, you know, it's not just within the team and the riders. They all know each other's families. And maybe it's exclusive to Pino because he's such a character. But I found that bit interesting as well, because I don't know, I'm sure there are some personalities like Roglic's family who are very much involved, but yeah, I found that quite interesting and very much more relaxed. Maybe again, shedding light on Groupama being a bit behind the times romantic.
I think in regards to Planche de Belleville and also like knowing what is to come in the series because we've watched the race already, one of my favorite quotes from the episode was when Pino was talking about mountains and he says, "I feel small at the base and big at the summit," which we've seen them race across flats. We've seen crashes. We've seen them race through the cobbles. But up to this point in the series, we haven't seen what role mountains play in the Tour de France, which is obviously a massive part of the race and the general classification. And Pino being one of the best French climbers, he doesn't look like a climber. He's got like swimmer shoulders. It's hilarious. But I found that quote like really beautiful. And also it's a very good like tie in to what we're going to watch later on in the series.
Speaking of ties into the rest of the series, one thing that was interesting that we didn't see in the Groupama section was the David Gaudu element. I don't know if it was after last year's tour or just before, but the debate about that relationship within the team of Gaudu and Pino, Gaudu being the new GC favourite for that team. And so we get to see him in the last 5 minutes, and he's all chirpy on his rollers. I think he calls Michael Storer Mish Mish. And then, so it's this, like we were saying in previous episode, is introducing another character that we're going to see further down the line, and I wonder if we're going to get that beef again, which is already building towards this next tour.
Oh, I love Gaudu.
I mean, that there's a character that I'm sure. So you know, Netflix is coming back to shoot more at the 2023 Tour de France. It's about to start. I guarantee that Gaudu is going to be heavy part of that, and you know, character development starting with the first series and extending into the second series would make a lot of sense there. So this episode, it's the French episode. What was the underlying purpose of this episode within the sort of scope of the whole series, and did it work? Like, did this episode work for all of you?
What I liked about it was the different structure that it had. I mean, again, it's got two teams, and they offset one another quite neatly for obvious reasons in this case. But it had, like you mentioned, Kaylee, it was slightly slower paced. Its music doesn't quite fit with this analogy, but it was almost slightly art housey, especially with its ending with Ben O'Connor sitting alone, eating his breakfast or lunch or whatever before getting on a flight. There was that kind of slightly downbeat ending, but mostly it sets the context for the whole Tour de France and the history of the race, or the sort of the wider context in its culture and, you know, what it means to race the Tour, as opposed to what's actually happening on the day.
I think for cycling fans as well, this is one which is a real draw card, because with Jumbo-Visma, it was this team of sort of superhumans that they were presented as, especially Wout van Aert, where it's almost like they're sports cars. Like, that human element is a little bit removed. Whereas with this, it's clearly people with deep emotional ties to the sport and huge emotional reactions to what's going on around them. And I think that appeals to the romantic in that sort of older era of cyclists and cycling fans. I think it also brings it into a greater lineage of the race rather than it just being some manufactured. I think it's certainly a little bit more nuanced and well-rounded in its portrayal.
This episode really got across to me, or like I already knew that this race is a massive deal in France. It's been going on for a really long time, and the French, you know, they have holidays around this time, and there's so many French people who follow the race for the entire 3 weeks and stand on the and camp on the sidelines and go and like camp on these massive climbs for days before the race comes through. And we don't really get to see that yet. I don't know if we're going to see it in the series or if they're going to highlight that in the future when we get to kind of the bigger mountain stages, but I think it does set the scene for France in relation to the Tour. And And I think it checks a lot of boxes in terms of this being a show that is not necessarily for English speaking fans, but is French friendly, French fan friendly.
I mean, having Thibaut Pinot is always going to be helpful on that front. So, well,
love the goats. Yeah.
Love the goats. Love the goats. I mean, I enjoyed this episode for very different reasons than I've enjoyed some of the other ones. Very little sort of in the way of anything racing related. Didn't learn a whole lot that we sort of didn't already know, other than some of the dynamics between like rider and manager and things like that. But like the relationship between Ben O'Connor and Julien Jourdi is not something that I was really wondering about, to be perfectly honest. But I do think that the episode served its function. It showed sort of the passion of the French people and the passion of the whole country for this race. It also showed how ridiculously hard it is and what some of these riders go through to try to continue. Those were the two sort of underlying themes for me, and it was successful there. I hope that in future episodes they kind of get back into a little bit more about the actual bike race. I think that the sort of the Planche de Belfie, Thibaut Pinot storyline was just a bit of a flop, right? Because he didn't even really, you know, he got dropped like the second it got hard. So that storyline that sort of the first half of the episode I was all building toward felt like it just sort of disappeared and we moved into Age of Tour. So that bit was a bit weird.
It's funny, like, given that this was a super French episode, the Frenchest French episode that we've had so far in the series, and that by the time the episode ended, I was just like, oh man, I love Ben O'Connor, and I'm so sad that he's going home because now he won't be in the rest of the series.
And like you said before, Abby, and he's, what was it, Kit was saying this, that he's doing quite well right now.
He's second overall at the Dauphiné right now, yeah, which is like one of the big lead-up races into the Tour de France. There's two week-long stage races that most of the GC contenders for the Tour de France go to before the Tour de France. For those who, I don't know, don't follow cycling and they're getting into it because of the Netflix series, we're in the build-up right now as the series comes out on June 9th, mid-June. And he's second overall right now behind Jonas Vingegaard. So he's riding quite well. And it's exciting to see like the two things next to each other. It's interesting.
It'd be interesting. We should chat with Ben O'Connor about the reception he's getting after this thing launched. I think that would be a fascinating story for us to run over on Escape Collective. You know, has he increased his Instagram followership in the last week? I don't know. All right. Well, it's time for us to wrap up today's episode. We'll be back with episode 4 here in not too long. Episode 4 is focused, well, the actual name of the episode, Attack, Counterattack. And based on the little bit that I have perused, it looks like we go back to Planche de Belfie and we get a bit from Pogacar and Jonas Vingegaard. So that should be an excellent episode. As a reminder, this podcast, all the podcasts we make here at Escape Collective, they're all supported by members. And so if you are not already a member, head over to escapecollective.com/join. That'll get you all the content that we make from the Tour de France. If you are either a new fan or just a massive Tour de France fan, make sure that you're signed up so that you don't miss anything throughout July. We'll be back with another episode of the Unchained Binge podcast very soon. Ta-ta. Au revoir. À demain.